Welcome again to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's your producer. We're here till 1 o'clock. Anna DeVlantis after that. What a great show you guys had with Anna yesterday. Some terrific guests on all of the news, some of which we were talking about earlier today. But right now on the Business Lunch, we're talking about markets, the economy, the interest rates, and what it means to you. We'll start with Michael Miller, Associate Professor of Economics at DePaul. I'm going to read the first sentence of something you wrote, and that is, the claims number is out, and what can one say but ouch? Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, John. And yes, that was my initial reaction. I was kind of hoping that last week's tick up was just a fluke. You know, it's a very noisy number.
We're talking about the unemployment numbers. Yeah, go ahead.
Unemployment first-time claims, and this means that there's actually growing weakness, not growing strength in the labor market. People are just being whipsawed. They have work. They don't have work. And it also gives more impetus, I think, for Congress to make sure it does what it can to provide a relief package so that these people can have some kind of financial relief until the vaccines take hold.
Why is it going back up?
You know, it appears to be that there's a fair number of states which are still forcing closures. And, of course, I know in New York City they're threatening for a month-long or so general shutdown of the city again. And I think some firms are simply they're having to lay people off, and they go and to the states and ask for the support that they are justified in having. And until I think people are unafraid to go out, which will be once the vaccines have taken hold, I think things will begin to turn around. But, you know, one thing you do see, first-time claims tend to begin to fall earlier than the economy begins to pick up. In other words, this is a sign. This is not a good sign. Having these claims rise as opposed to fall is not a good sign. We would like to see this have a decline, and then you would see that unemployment would follow after this. And also it would be a sign that households are in better shape than they were before.
But we don't have that sign right now.
But we don't have that sign. And I know that the Fed met yesterday, and they kept interest rates low, which is very good. But, you know, it's a good news, bad news, as I seem to always talk about. They said they're going to keep interest rates low probably through 2022. But, you know, the bad thing about that is that's a sign that they think that the economy is going to take at least that long to get back to where we were pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And for unemployment to be down where we think it should be given this labor force, and that will be done without having a major uptick in inflation. So there seems to be, while the economy is growing, it seems to be an anemic future that we're looking at the moment.
We have such mixed signals, don't we? On the one hand, record numbers day after day, nationally and locally, of deaths and cases of COVID, at the same time that the vaccine is being put in people's arms. And we have super low interest rates, we have market highs, and at the same time, we have these very troubling trends. So, you know, if
we
you
do,
said, how are we doing, I don't know that it's so easy to answer that question.
It isn't, and it all depends on to whom you're speaking. You know, if you're talking to the upper class, the white collar and so forth, they're doing just fine working from home, and they're not having disruptions in their incomes. But if you go into people that are hourly workers in hospitality and so forth, they're just being run over by this economy. And you know, they talk about a K-shaped recovery. We're coming out, a group is coming out, and another group is not. I find it disturbing. And that's, again, why I'm hoping that Congress will act by Friday, as they say they might, to have some kind of assistance, including, by the way, they apparently are going to provide checks to households, not the $1,200 per person as it was last time. But these dollars will be spent because most of these people have needs that they need to be met. and especially things like rents and so forth.
Yeah, it's maddening, isn't it? I mean, don't hourly workers vote? How are they not responsive to this constituency?
Yeah, there's two ways of looking at that. Why aren't more people out in the street saying we can't have shutdowns because you're destroying my job and my business? But at the same time, you know, they have family responsibilities. Maybe they just can't go out and it's just troubling. That's a perfect word for it.
Yeah. Well, if you have the power as the government to say you can't work to somebody else, then you have the obligation to provide them something in return. And we've only done the first part of that. And it's.
Yeah. I've argued that from the very beginning. Politically, I tend to be on the right, and I'm not never necessarily in favor of big government, but this is the one exception where the government has, in a sense, caused so many of the problems, and I understand the social and the medical reasons why they've done some of these things, but then it behooves them to in a sense, make things whole, make things right, and it's disturbing to see politics getting in the way over the past couple of months when something could have been done.
Michael Miller from DePaul University. We got to get that basketball team back on the floor. The associate professor of economics over there. It's nice to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for your time.
You got it.
There he goes, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. Have a safe holiday. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ian Schur joins us, editor-at-large at CNET.com. Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well. I see, and we don't have time to go into the mall, that you all have named the best tech products for 2020. What's high on your list?
Me personally, I think my favorite one to bring up is a device called the Oculus Quest 2. And this is a very interesting device. It's virtual reality, right? So they take a screen and they put it so close to your eyes that your brain is convinced you're in the computer world. And one of the things that's been really tough about it is that these things have usually been expensive, they're not really easy to use, all this stuff. Well, now they have gotten down to $300, and before the pandemic, I was putting this on everyone I knew pretty much, and they all had a really easy time with it. People who were techie, people who were not, and generally speaking, it's a really fun and unusual device. And it's part of why we named it one of the coolest devices we touched this year.
Give me another one on the list that you like.
Yeah, I think the other one that really stands out to me is the Wyze cams. So if you're starting to get into smart home stuff and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, do I want to do a Nest thermostat or do I want to do a keypad for my door that I can control remotely? One of the really easy things you can try out is called the Wyze Cam, W-Y-Z-E. We, of course, have a review on CNET. And what it is it's a $30 or $20, depending on which one you buy, camera that connects to the Internet. And it's very easy to use. You don't have to pay extra if you don't want to. And you can set it up, like, at your garage to see when someone comes in. Or you can set it up at your door to see when packages arrive. And just, the idea that this stuff is so cheap to use these days and that it's high quality is really great.
I see that from the Apple Store, they will deliver items to your home now. How about that?
Yeah, right? So, you know, Amazon's got the one-day delivery. How do you compete with that? And Apple has decided to start using their stores essentially as shipping hubs, right? They're already education centers and places people gather, so why not? What they're going to do is they're going to offer you two-hour delivery in most metro areas, including Chicagoland, of course. And they're going to charge $5 in the initial period. We don't know for how long, but it'll be $5 to get that two-hour delivery to your home. And they'll be using Postmates, I believe, in the United States. But it's a really interesting way to try and kind of compete with this new reality of everyone staying at home and not wanting to go into malls and whatnot. This is a really easy way to bring them all to you.
I almost wonder why they're charging $5. I'm buying a $600 phone. You need 605. I mean, why not say free delivery within 10 miles of the store? There's enough stores that are mostly in metropolitan areas, right?
I don't disagree with you. I mean, you know, the world's largest and one of the most valuable companies charging you $5 feels a little weird. But, you know, the reality is that I think they are still trying to figure out if it's worth it. And I believe that it's probably way more than $5. They're subsidizing some of that. But I agree. I mean, it should be free. They do free shipping on everything else that's above a certain amount. Why not this? So, yeah.
What's the news on Facebook? I understand that they are somehow able to use Facebook to fight at least misinformation about COVID. How do they do that?
Yeah, one of the things that Facebook has been doing a lot since the coronavirus began is that, you know, this company has been under fire from a lot of people, including us at CNET, for not taking a lot of the bad behavior on the internet seriously, right? You've got everything from revenge porn to disinformation to hate and harassment and all the stuff, and they were always really bad at it. But with COVID, they've actually been really aggressive. They've been taking down a lot of the conspiracy theory stuff. Now, they haven't done it all. But now what they're going to do is they're going to look at all the stuff they've taken down, and they're going to say anyone who liked it, commented on it, or interacted with it in some way, so you clicked on it or shared it or whatever, they're going to send you a note saying, hey, you remember that thing? It's actually not true. And it's going to be an interesting experiment, because one of the things I have found is that when you have someone who really has gone down the rabbit hole of a conspiracy theory, they're very hesitant to be told that they're wrong. And especially someone like Facebook, who, let's be honest, a lot of us don't trust it anyway, now them coming over and saying, you know, by the way, that was wrong, I don't think it's going to have any impact. But we'll see.
I wonder, too, if there's a diminishing number of returns. More than half, it seems to me, of the president's tweets are flagged by Twitter. And it's to the point now where I don't even pay that much attention to, I don't read through to the flag. I just read the president's tweet. And I'm really consuming the president's message. They aren't blocking it. They aren't even filtering it.
This is actually a big problem. And it's interesting because, you know, again, I mean, I've been pushing all of these companies to take a lot of these issues seriously. And now that they are doing something, one of the challenges is that, especially with someone like President Trump, although there are others out there as well, who regularly violate the terms of service of these companies, it's hard to really show that, oh, you know, this is something you can't read, or that it's bad, right, or is wrong, or whatever. And it becomes kind of something you gloss over. I don't know how they're going to solve it, honestly. You know, there's a lot of debate, by the way, about whether Trump will even have a Twitter account when he leaves office, because he'll no longer be under the special rule that says any government person can basically say whatever they want on Twitter and not be have their account deleted. So it's going to be interesting no matter what, but, yeah, it's a tough one.
I'm just looking at his Twitter account now. Just released data, this was 2 hours ago, shows many thousands of non-citizens voted in Nevada. They are totally ineligible to vote! Exclamation point. Okay, underneath that, this claim about election fraud is disputed. That's the most recent thing from the president, and I'm not that often clicking through. To be honest with you, I've already made up my mind about the election and what the president has to say about it. And I think, though, his followers, regardless of what they have under that flag, are hearing the president's message. I'm not sure this is blunting the falsity of what the president is saying.
Well, and the other part you have to keep in mind is that, you know, 70-some-odd million people voted for him, and a fair number of them in surveys and everything else have said that they don't really pay attention to his tweets very much. They see it as kind of bluster, right? And they care more about what he's done.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing to me is that outside of the Twitter sphere and the media sphere that we all live in, right, does it actually matter what they're doing with this account? I don't know, right? I mean,
I think it's a really weird situation. Yeah, I think you're answering the question. I think the president says that, and you say that, and it really doesn't matter what either of you say. I'm not reading the flag, and I'm not believing the president. I think people have generally made up their minds. I've got 30 seconds left. Google's new cinematic photos promise to bring old memories to life. That's a headline from your Rye Christ. What's that story?
Oh, this is so cool. So we have been seeing more and more efforts to make photos kind of feel more alive. And what you can see, you go on CNET, see the video we have of it. They take a normal photo, and they're actually able to make it feel like it's 3D. And it's super cool. It's all using artificial intelligence, right? So special computer programs. But it is amazing what they can do. And it just says so much about what the future is going to be, right? I mean, this stuff you only used to see in documentaries where they did special work, right? And they had experts who would touch up the photo and make it look this way. Now a computer program's doing it, boop, just easy. It's amazing.
From CNET, Ian Scher, editor-at-large, will visit again. Thank you for your time and expertise.
Absolutely. Take care.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch here on WGN, John Williams here, and Mark Kitkowski joins us now from Replay Lincoln Park. ReplayLincolnPark.com is the website you'll want. And I really like what I'm reading here, Mark, but I'm not exactly sure. But I'm not exactly sure what I'm reading here. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Hi, John. So thank you for having me. And what we're doing is, obviously, we've been shut down inside at Replay Lincoln Park, and we have a great team of artists and bartenders and servers and whatnot. And we had to do something to keep them employed, so we created a holiday drive-in movie experience. Two of them, in fact.
Yeah,
so we've got one. Go ahead, sorry.
Maybe people should know what Replay Lincoln Park is first. What is Replay Lincoln Park?
So we are a 9,000-square-foot arcade bar, and we specialize in also doing kind of pop culture events, these pop culture pop-ups that we put on basically 6 to 10 times a year.
Yeah.
And we can't do those right now, but we've got this great team, so we brought those outside and created a drive-in movie experience, a holiday movie enhanced by custom-made art and decorations and twinkly lights, and then we have a bunch of our staff dressing up as quintessential holiday characters. We've got Mr. and Mrs. Claus and the Grinch and a bunch of elves and reindeer running around and kind of enhancing the holiday movie experience.
So then is it a park that I'm driving through? Where do I actually do this then?
So we've got one location on West Madison, so Madison and the Expressway, Madison and Des Plaines, and then the other one is at our parking lot at Replay Lincoln Park, so 2833 North Sheffield. We've got two parking lots, two distinct movie holiday experiences.
So I wind my way through and take in the lights, the action, the scenes, the sets, kind of like a pop-up bar for your car. How long does it take me to go through one of these areas?
It's an hour and a half long experience. And you don't really drive through. You drive in, and then there's some, you know, things to look at while you're parking, but you park your car, and then you enjoy a movie experience. So the movie that we're playing right now is the classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the Rankin and Bass version from 1962.
Am I literally watching the movie then on a screen somewhere, or rather I'm just walking through sets that sort of depict the scenes in the film?
No, you're watching the movie. The movie's on a large screen, kind of like a regular drive-in movie experience. A lot of people aren't familiar with drive-in movies anymore, but you park your car, you tune your radio to the station that is assigned to broadcast the audio from the movie. You watch the film, and while you're watching the film, you enjoy all the different sets and lights and different blow-ups. And then we have actors, walking up to the cars and greeting the children and the Grinch running around and running pranks and pretending to steal your hubcap. And
oh, nice. Yeah, I was wondering, yeah. I mean, so you get to maybe cherry pick from Americana. What are the favorite characters? Does Clark Griswold fall down, or does the Grinch terrorize you? Who all makes a cameo?
So the Grinch, obviously, we talked about him, Santa, Mrs. Claus, a bunch of elves, reindeer. We've got Krampus sometimes making an appearance, the abominable snowman.
So we're going old school here. Yeah, yeah. So then do you make a reservation like you do in movie theaters? We were making reservations before, I guess, March, and some of these drive-up movies were getting kind of crowded. Do you make a reservation? Is that what we do?
Yeah, you buy a ticket in advance. So we're selling tickets on our website, replaylincolnpark.com, or we have individual websites for the individual events, Miracle on WestMadison.com. and hollyjolly.us for the experience in Lincoln Park at Replay.
And you're doing it every night, are you?
Wednesday through, well, actually now every night through Christmas Eve. So, yeah, every night right now.
Got it. Okay. So, replay Lincoln Park and the Holly Jolly Drive-In. One more time, those websites?
HollyJolly.us and MiracleOnWestMadison.com.
Yeah. Boy, that's a pivot. Nicely done. That sounds like fun, Mark. It sounds to me like a lot of work to execute, but it sounds like you've also got the people to do it.
Yeah, we've got a great team, and they're doing a great job. And I love the fact that they're willing to pivot. You know, people that are normally bartenders are dressing up as Mrs. Claus, or one of our doorman is playing Santa Claus, and on and on. So it's great.
I can see them saying, "Yeah, wait, I got to do what?" But it sounds like they're working, they're entertaining, and that's the business you're in. Mark Kwiatkowski from Replay Lincoln Park. Okay, stay well and good luck. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Thanks, John.
There he goes. Sounds like he's in the parking lot now. Let's continue on the Wintrust Business Lunch back into the WGN Radio Newsroom. And this is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Abbott Laboratories shares are up after the company won U.S. authorization for a rapid COVID-19 test that costs $25 and can be used at home. Abbott's Binax Now is a single-use swab-collected test that produces results in 15 minutes. Until now, the test had to be administered by healthcare providers. The company plans to make 30 million tests available for at-home use in the first quarter of next year and 90 million more in the second quarter. Bars and restaurants in Chicago will get some financial relief from the city. Mayor Lightfoot has announced $11 million in grants that will go to nearly 1,100 bars, restaurants, and performance venues. The businesses will get an average of $10,000 each through two COVID-19 relief programs. The Chicago Boat Show has been canceled. It was one of the last conventions at McCormick Place before the pandemic hit earlier this year. It was supposed to be held next month, but has been called off because of health and safety concerns. Organizers say they expect it to be back at McCormick Place in 2022. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
12:51 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. How far-reaching is this pandemic and businesses and bars shutting down? Three Floyds is going to permanently close its brew pub in Munster, Indiana. Amy Guth joins us. Anna's coming up next. I'm very interested in that interview she's going to be doing with Dave Savini. Amy Guth is on the line right now, though. Hi, Amy. Welcome.
Hi, John. Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
I guess it's the brew pub. They're still going to make their beer, though, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what they did was they had closed down that brew pub earlier on. And then, you know, the founder, Nick Floyd, told investors in a recent letter, you know what, we're not going to reopen. He said, as of December 1st, 2020, we've decided to permanently close the brew pub. And he said it was not an easy decision, of course, but at the end of the day, he wanted to put safety of workers and customers first. You know, this is a brew pub that in Munster, Indiana, that thousands of people would flock to for this annual Dark Lord Day, this day of this beer. You know, a lot of these small breweries kind of have this one day where a special beer is released in the craft brewery realm. And so a lot of people flocked to the place for that. They will keep making the beer for distribution and for curbside pickup. So the beer's not going away, but kind of that experience of going to the brew pub and sampling and all of that kind of thing, that is going away. However, this year they did cancel Dark Lord Day for that beer and shifted the sales of that beer online. So, you know, here's another example of a restaurant that's just really, really been struggling. There was some data that came out from a Boston firm this week that I thought was really, really, rather shocking, and that was that 56% of Illinois restaurants and bars that were polled by this firm that's tracking small businesses say they have no ability to pay December rent, 56%. And that number has just been going up and up and up. It was about, nationally it's 61%, so it's lower than the national number, but still it's grown 19% from November. So it's just continuing to go up, and I'm sure we will hear more stories like this about, like, other breweries and restaurants and bars like Three Floyds.
I guess that explains the belligerence. That's my word. But, I mean, some of these restaurants and bars that just continue to open, it's like, well, what are you going to do? There was a Facebook group in Minnesota, not unlike the one in Chicago, and it was, we're open, come on in. And the places were packed, and they care. It's not that they don't care what's going to happen, but what is going to happen is they're going to close permanently. if they don't stay open. So while medically it's a bad idea, maybe in the long run, economically for all of us, it's a bad idea. You understand the pressure these people are under to just try something, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, there is a little bit of hope potentially coming from the city, and that is there are 995 grants now available through the city. Mayor Lightfoot just announced this week. They are $10,000 apiece for independent restaurants and bars, so not chains, but independent ones, that need emergency funding, that, you know, can't pay rent, can't negotiate with the landlord, or already have negotiated all they can with the landlord, and the landlord's, you know, hands are kind of tied. And so these 10,000 grants, 995 is not nearly enough to help all the restaurants and bars in Chicago that need help. But that's certainly, you know, something. And I think we'll see tons of applications come in with that. But they said the money would go out right away. So that could be as soon as a week.
I'm intrigued by what TikTok and Walmart are going to do. That sounds like a good idea.
That makes two of us. I'm also very intrigued by this. So Walmart, they're looking to invest in TikTok, but they also said that they are going to partner with the app and sell items that you see on influencers' TikTok streams. So say you're an influencer and you're using particular types of makeup. I know there's a lot of, you know, makeup tutorials and things like that, or wearing particular kinds of clothing, or using, I don't know, a skateboard, whatever. Walmart is going to try to make those items for sale during your stream. So I think that's going to be really fascinating to see how that shakes out for the influencers. We saw this on YouTube, how people could add, you know, put ads on their YouTube and make that a revenue stream for themselves. We saw Instagram influencers being sent product to review or talk about, or being sent on trips, things like that. This is kind of next level, that you'd be watching a TikTok and get an ad to, like, hey, buy this skateboard you see this guy on, or buy that, you know, there's the cranberry juice guy that was very popular.
Right,
you know,
right.
Buy this cranberry. Right.
That's funny now that you mentioned the cranberry juice guy on the longboard. I mean, why not have a link that you could buy it instantly? Like, we need more of that. But I'm surprised that somebody hadn't thought about that and figured out the software to make it happen. Now they are. United wants your COVID contact tracing info. We have 60 seconds, but get started on that.
Yeah, so the long and short of it is there is a voluntary program that is rolling out right away. United Airlines, they're going to start asking passengers to provide info at check-in to be used by the CDC. So that's, hey, where did you stay? Where are you going to stay when you land? How long are you going to be there? What's your name, number, and email? Things like that. It's going to start with outgoing international passengers, and then that's going to roll out to domestic and incoming international passengers in the next few weeks. But, again, it's voluntary, but they're hoping that they can aid the CDC, because the CDC has been trying to track for months and months, but often has incomplete information. So I'm sure other airlines will be following suit, but United is going to start it off.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for your help again, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.